We definitely have to. We have to get the engineer loop onto the actual recording. I'm just saying, if we can do it with Drew on Fridays, why can't we do it with everybody?
Exactly. The engineers are the most interesting people in the shop. Turns out we're very boring. Oh, hi everyone. I'm very boring, Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we will try to make today make sense.
I'm very boring, Kai Rizdahl. Thank you for joining us. Thankfully, y'all are not boring, and that's a good thing because it's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. You bring the questions. We bring the answers along with much support from Marissa Cabrera and the legions of people who don't get to be on the microphone on this podcast.
Exactly. Who, I should say, I hope it's appropriate to say this, are now in a union.
What?
Marketplace voted to unionize today.
That is true. That is
true.
So
there you go. Anyway, today we are starting. That's our big news. That's our big news, everybody. Personal news. Or whatever it is you say on Twitter. All right, today we are starting with a question about the restaurant business. Anne in Boise writes and says, our local paper recently had two feature articles about restaurants possibly not being able to reopen because they can't find staff. Is this happening anywhere else? Turns out,
it
yes.
Is. It is. Yes, lots of places. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, it's there. Thank you again to Marissa Cabrera for putting in all this info about how Indeed and the New York Times did a story about it. There are just not enough workers to fill job openings, particularly in the food service industry. I would imagine this is maybe going to be the case across other sectors as well. But of course, you know, restaurants are the most stark right now because a lot of them closed and are now trying to reopen. Yep. And evidently, you know, it's literally like everybody trying to hire all at the same time.
That is, it is the most common complaint of people in business that I talk to on Marketplace. The CEO of Chipotle said it today. I talked to small business people who are like, yeah, like five employees. They're like, yeah, no, I can't really find people. The answer, of course, is raise pay, but that's a whole different conversation. The other thing is, especially with restaurants, the other thing is, though, especially with restaurants, it's like high contact, right? And I think people are still afraid, legitimately so, because, you know, the virus is in charge of this economy. And I think that's going to hold a lot of people back from wanting to get restaurant jobs. Until maybe everybody's vaccinated or herd status or any of that stuff. So I think there's a lot going on there. Lots going on.
I think there is. And restaurants, that's like if you're the server, you are interacting with people without their masks on, potentially indoors. Yep. And, you know, we know that that's the most common version of form of transmission is indoor extended exposure. But yeah, it's really interesting because I think restaurants, you know, there was a bit in that Times piece about how a lot of people have just left the industry altogether. Like restaurant work is one of those jobs that is, you know, less than ideal in a million different ways, right? The hours are bad. You might be working for tips. It's like a rough environment being a cook in a kitchen. But it's always been the thing you could fall back on. Like you could always get a restaurant job. And I think for people taking having a year of their lives where they couldn't rely on that job. A lot of them, you know, they quoted people in that article who were just like, actually, I decided to go back to school. Like, I'm not even going to work in this industry anymore.
Yep.
Which is interesting.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Okay. We're going to go to Bitcoin now. And this is actually an interesting one. It's from Amber. It's an email. And I will read it because that's what I have to do when you guys don't send voice memos. Hi, Make Me Smart team, Amber says. Hi, Amber. Stopped at my local North Texas grocery store and noticed this sign advertising that you could buy Bitcoin on the Coinstar machine, which my brain translates into exchanging real coins for imaginary unicorn coins. In what way is this a service that people need or want? Can y'all make me smart about that? I think we can. Coinstar, for those of you who are not familiar, is that those kiosks in supermarkets where you can go and dump your coins and they will give you a voucher you can take to the cashier and get actual money. They do take like 8.5% or 9%, but that's what those are. Anyway, so now I guess you can get Bitcoin out of them?
You can't get a coin out. There's no such thing as a Bitcoin. I do think that's true. Embarrassingly frequently worth reminding people. God. An actual coin will not come out. I'm still reeling from Kai, the radio DJ. Hi, Amber. That was amazing.
kill me. Kill me now.
Okay. You are indeed, you are not getting a coin. I'm going to say it one more time. You are purchasing, like Kai said, a voucher that you can then use at a site called CoinMe, which is a cryptocurrency ATM startup, to get, you know, some tiny fraction of Bitcoin. I'm not going to lie, I think this is genius. Because, like, as I discovered, you don't want to gamble your real money on Bitcoin. But if you just have, like, coins around the house and you were going to exchange them for an Amazon card or, you know, like $18 or something, like, I don't know. If you did it every time, eventually you could chip away. You could have like 1/18 of a Bitcoin or some Ethereum or something. I think that's actually quite clever, I have to say. But crypto ATMs. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. No, go ahead. I have a sidebar. Go ahead on crypto ATM.
Okay. Well, I was going to say crypto ATMs are actually probably one of the earliest iterations of Bitcoin. Like there were there was a boxer who invested in crypto ATMs. And evidently there has been a surge in them over the last year because of the rising popularity of Bitcoin. And that, I think, that's where, like, you own some cryptocurrency, you go to the ATM and you can exchange it. You can get cash out, but they have really high fees also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fees will kill you no matter where you are, regular bank, JP Morgan, or doing Bitcoin ATMs. So here's the thing I learned about Bitcoin the other day that, number one, shows my naivete, but also might be a public service to people. For those of you who are wondering how Bitcoins can be fractionalized, right, and divided up so they're tradable in quantities other than one full Bitcoin at today $54,000 a piece. Don't get me started on volatility. Anyway, Bitcoin are subdivided into these things called Satoshis, known as sats. And one sat is 1/100,000,000th of a Bitcoin, which I just learned the other day.
Wow.
So it solves a great mystery
for
me.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wondered that too. I was like, how do they? Wow, I never knew that. Yep. Satoshi, by the way, of course, comes from Satoshi Nakamoto, which I believe is the pseudonym of the anonymous author of the white paper that originally proposed Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Sats.
Yep.
And if you duck it, anyway, if you look it up real quick, then your autocomplete will be Satoshi to USD.
Oh, well, there you go.
There's an exchange rate. Go. It'll convert it. Well, one Satoshi is 0.00061151 U.S. dollars.
Wait, say that again. 0.0 what?
0.00061151 U.S. dollars.
So 0.6 of a dollar. I don't even know how much that is. But there you go. Well, that's how much it is. 0.6 of a dollar. Anyway, so there you go. PSA on Bitcoins from us today. How about that?
That's a really good one. I got smarter too.
Thank you.
I love the show.
Thank you. Okay. All right. An actual voice memo coming up. Here we go.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Caleb from Hampton, Virginia. What happens when you have stock in a company and that company either folds or is bought by another company? Are your stocks just gone? Thanks for making us smarter.
Are you still talking about Bitcoin?
Caleb.
No, I'm just joking. Yeah.
That's right. It depends on your definition of fold, right? And which chapter of the bankruptcy code they go under on. If it's chapter 7, which is liquidation, you are just out of luck and your shares will become worthless. If it's chapter 11, you're probably mostly, almost certainly, definitely out of luck because shareholders are way down on the totem pole of people who are protected in a bankruptcy, but you might get some mercy from the bankruptcy court. But if your company goes bankrupt in any way, shape, or form, odds do not look good for you as a shareholder. Now, this isn't fair, but the people at the very top of the list, and I'll explain why in a second, the people at the very top of the list for getting their money back when companies go under are bondholders, people who own the company's debt. And that is because shareholders, generally speaking, share in the upside should a company grow, right? Which is, in theory, infinity, right? I mean, if you bought a share of Apple in 1983, it's like worth $29,000 today if you'd held on to it, right? Bondholders, on the other hand, they give you the money and they expect you to grow and you get back some reasonably meager interest rate, especially now. And that's why bondholders, debt holders, are protected more strenuously than shareholders in a bankruptcy. Now, if your company gets acquired, depends on what kind of acquisition it is. If it's an all-cash deal, you will get the cash value of your stock. If it's a stock swap deal, then you'll get the commensurate value of your stock in the acquiring company's shares. So very different circumstances depending on the circumstances, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Maybe he means GameStop. I'm just trying to figure out where this question, what prompted this question.
Totally fair. Totally fair.
I'm off the rails. All right. We have another voice memo coming up for you, which is not specifically a question. If anything, it is an answer.
Hello, Make Me Smart. This is Mike Stallcup from Madison, Alabama. A few days ago, I heard Molly ask for a recording of cicadas. Although we are not expecting any periodical cicadas this year in Alabama, I do have a recording of them that was made in 2011. That was Brood 19, which is sometimes called the Great Southern Brood, and it returns every 13 years. At the time, I was working at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. We had a picnic area in a large grove of pine trees that apparently was a favorite with the cicadas. One of our engineers used his high-quality microphones to record them. This segment is relatively free of noises from cars and planes, but you can still hear an occasional bird mixed in with the cicadas.
Oh, that's the sound of the apocalypse, man. That's the Death Eater.
Whoa.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
According to Allie Ward's March 2nd Ologies podcast interview with entomologist Dr. Gene Kritsky, there are three different species of periodical cicadas, and they all have different calls. I couldn't tell from the recording which species we had, but they were definitely noisy. Thanks for all you do to make us smart.
Wow.
Keep up the good work.
Dang.
Mike, that was awesome. That was awesome.
That
sound?
That's
right?
Terrifying. The Death Eaters.
Totally
good one.
Terrifying.
Yes, that sounds like a shriek coming at you from hell. That is absolutely horrible.
Right.
Although I will say on the plus side, man, I could listen to Mike Stallcup all day long.
No joke,
what
right?
What a lovely
no
voice.
Yeah.
Do a podcast, man. I know it seems like the world is full up on those right now, but there's still room. There's still room. Wow, that's terrifying. Okay, that on that hellmouth note, that is it for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We will be back tomorrow. I feel like all that now I changed my mind about the coolness of the cicada situation. We will be back tomorrow for Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. In the meantime, please keep sending your question, your emails, and your voice memos. We're at makemesmart@marketplace.org. See, this is why you send a voice memo, because you might get like a podcast out of it.
Right.
Or,
you or know,
at least an
a
idea to do
for
one.
A podcast.
Yeah.
Why not? Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters. Also, those Make Me Smart explainers you hear on those devices that are listening to everything you say in your home.
That's right. But it's worth it for our explainers. Today's program
well,
was engineered by our new boss, Liana Sculacci. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music, which means they'll work here forever. Donna Tam is the senior producer of the show, the executive director of On Demand. This is Tara Nieves.
I wonder if they have it in their contracts to write music for Marketplace that they get the credit in perpetuity. I'm just saying.
I don't know.
They
should.
I don't know.